This is Not the Average Real Estate Podcast by Not Your Average Real Estate Investor. Dipna Boholt used real estate investing strategies to completely replace the income from her accountancy practice with passive income in just 18 months and has since taught thousands of others to do the same. Welcome to the I Love Real Estate Podcast.
Hi guys, Dipna here, and welcome to I Love Real Estate podcast series. Last week I shared with you some of the facts and figures around why we're living in the absolute best time in history ever. Much to the disgust of some of the mainstream media and some of the things that they're saying about where we're at in the market and the cycle and how bad the world actually is. So I hope you enjoyed that one. This week, what we're going to be covering is we're going to be starting to look at some of the big disruptors, the technical, financial, the social forces that they're really wreaking havoc on the way that we live and have really been a bit of a catalyst for massive social and lifestyle changes in the next 10 years. When you understand these forces, what you'll be able to do is better be able to predict what's going to be happening in the Australian property market and therefore position yourself to get ahead of the curve and ultimately profit from some of these big changes and these big disruptors that we're going to be talking about. For example, in this podcast, we're going to learn about how to actually create mortgage-free housing. And this is something you could do easily in the next 12 months. Now, I don't care where you're starting from or what position you're in. Absolutely anybody can get going in the property market. And a student of mine, actually, he went out and created $30,000 worth of passive income on a house that she doesn't even own. So I'll talk about that too. That's absolutely crazy. Imagine making $30,000 worth of passive income, real income. Now, obviously, you've got to pay tax on that. But on a property she doesn't even own, but she controls. So we'll talk about that in this podcast as well. So look, Let's go through the information. Let's get into it. And again, I'll see you up on the other side of this little podcast, and we'll do a bit of a catch up then. So hope you enjoy it.
Now, what I want to talk about now are the game changers. Now, some of the stuff I'm going to do might stretch you a little bit because we're going to be talking about some next level stuff. But when we start to think about how fast things move, I was only talking to my husband Brian about this recently, about technology and things, like in his father's time, the cartoons used to be about, the man on the moon, and then we went to the moon. And, and then we had the Jetsons and, Beam Me Up, Scotty, and all this kind of stuff, and the watches, and then they're now a reality. A lot of the stuff that was in the movies, that was fiction, that was on the cartoons, is now a reality. And the thing to remember here is that the speed with which new technology is taking effect now is so dramatic. The speed of change is phenomenal. So we need to keep up with that. And we need to keep up with that at a lot of different levels. Obviously, I'm only really talking about real estate today, but this flows through into everything. It flows through into health, it flows through into lifestyle, into jobs. I've got a 17-year-old, and we've been talking about, what he wants to do when he finishes school, and what kind of career he wants to go into, and this kind of things. And some of the careers that he mentioned, I said, honey, they're not going to be a job in 5 years' time. They're not going to be an industry in 5 years' time. You need to be thinking about where the new opportunities actually lie. Now, that applies to careers as much as it does to real estate. So let's have a look at those kind of opportunities and the trends that are taking place and how we can then follow those trends. So the first, I've got 10 mega trends here that I want to go through, and then I'll talk about some other stuff. But 10 mega trends here, the share economy, could it be the end of ownership? We start to look at the share economy and we look at things like Uber and Uber Eats and Lyft and Airbnb and these share economies where there are the ability to be able to share what you've got. I was looking at, you know, other ones like Space It and things like that, where you've got, you know, you can rent out your cupboard effectively, or your storage in your garage. And all of these things start to bring on new markets and new opportunities. Could this infiltrate into housing? You know, is the next stage of this share housing, where we own a fractional percentage of housing? We've got fractional ownership in boats. We've got fractional ownership in aeroplanes. Could we have fractional ownership in houses? Fractional ownership in investment properties? To some extent, we have that in the big property trusts and those types of things, the REITs. But it could come down to a much lower level where you own a third of a house. Lending is something that's going to have to keep up with the times here. Lending, I believe, is going to be the biggest thing that holds back the industry. But there are new kids on the block, and I want to talk about that towards the end of this session. There are new opportunities arising for lending and for financing. And because of the internet and things like that, we're able to open a lot of the doors that previously have been closed. Legislation has been holding us back. Imagine if we had the ability to be able to borrow money from anyone, anywhere in the world. Imagine if we didn't have the restrictions of our banking license laws in this country, and if we wanted to borrow from Mr. Wong in Shanghai, you know, individual, or Mr. whoever, Gonski in Russia, I don't know. I was trying to think of a Russian name and couldn't come up with one. Something ending in ski. Imagine if that was possible, what it would do for the growth in real estate. Because one of the biggest restrictions that we have is the ability to be able to borrow money. It would also create a little more chaos, because the chaos would come from irresponsible lending, because we don't have those regulatory bodies sitting over us. So it would become more of a freer marketplace. But if you look at any industry, that is the trend. We are trending towards a freer marketplace in everything. Australia is one of the most regulated countries in the world. Now, that's a good thing and a bad thing. It's a good thing in that when things go bad, we don't feel it as much, like the GFC. We didn't fall out of the sky like some of the other countries did that were less regulated than us, particularly from a finance industry. But at the same time, it restricts our growth. And the trend in every industry is one towards a massive marketplace, an open marketplace, a marketplace beyond legislation. That's an interesting concept. Could that be possible? That's one of my last points that I actually want to make, and where that, I believe, is actually heading. But this shared economy is something that will change the investment metrics. And, you know, the more talk we have around affordability and those sort of issues, the more this shared ownership becomes popular. You know, it starts with brother and sister go out and buy a house together. You know, or mother and child go out and buy a house together because of affordability and in different strengths and things like that. And then it grows to, you know, me and my mate go and buy a house together. And then it goes to, well, let's put everybody in the lotto pool that we pool every month to go and buy every week to go and buy a lotto ticket. There's six of us. Let's all go and buy a house together. And it grows from there. But it is something that this whole idea of a shared economy is becoming more popular and more mainstream. Take that from a rental perspective. This will change the relationship between rent and pricing, because the more we go down this line and the more we're able to rent out our excess. So put the shared ownership aside and take it to shared access, or access of our excess. You know, our spare bedroom on Airbnb, our storage space, our car spot, you know, our car, our holiday unit, our whatever. All of these things now can become a little bit more of a money spinner, and it changes the ratio between yield and value of the property. Because now a lot more assets can become higher yielding properties. Therefore, they become higher value. Therefore, that creates more demand. And remember, in economics, we've got the demand and supply curve. The point at which your demand and supply curves meet is your economic equilibrium. It is really a hypothetical spot. It hardly ever exists in a market. It's always going to be a little bit higher, a little bit lower. Demand's going to be a little bit above or a little bit lower than supply. Hardly ever is it exactly at economic equilibrium. But when demand is higher than supply, prices go up. Rental prices go up, value of houses go up. When supply is greater than demand, rents come down, values come down. It works both ways. So what you've got to do is understand that dynamics and where any particular market is at any point in time to predict what the trend is, whether it's an upward trend or a downward trend. Other features of the shared economy is that customers expect higher levels of customization and finish. As the marketplace gets bigger, and it's not a matter of you get what you're given, the consumer becomes more picky because they've got more choice. So your finishes have to be better. Your services have to be better. You know, your delivery of product has to be better. So you've got to stay on top of you know, your properties. You can't just buy something and, you know, 20 years later you might think about doing a renovation. You've got to keep them maintained at a higher level if you want to keep your properties at a premium yield, because there is more choice. You know, you jump on the internet, oh, I don't like that kitchen, no, I like this one over here, or, oh, that's got two bathrooms over there. Information is readily available, and this information exchange is what is making the delivery different. Give you some examples. Now, these couple were actually on the stage with me last weekend, and I put these guys up because this is a young couple. I think in their video they said they bought 9 properties in the last 12 months. They've done 9 deals. Now, that's pushing it. That's going. But these are little pocket rockets, these pair. And just to give you some indication, this is a student example of a manufactured growth deal. Look at the finishes. Look at the high level of finish. Now, because they not only made a chunk deal, so if you look at those 3 circles that collided that I had there before, this was a chunk deal because it gave an increase in value of the property, but it also created a positive cash flow. So by implementing the shared economy through Airbnb in this particular case, but there's other ways of doing it, in this particular case, this property not only elevated something like $110,000 in value, but it also gave them $29,000 worth of passive income. That's income. Now, yes, you're going to pay tax on that $29,000. But if you're not paying tax, you're not earning any money. You've got to get used to the idea of paying tax. You've got to get used to the idea that paying tax means that you're getting ahead. Get rid of this negative gearing mantra that has been governing our industry for the last 40-odd years. 20, 30-odd years anyway, nearly 40. So we need to start changing that stuff around. This was another student. This is another one of being able to turn something that was negatively geared into a positive cash flow of $15,000 a year, positive cash flow. And this is utilizing unutilized space. Think about this one here. Now, this is a good example because this is another student deal. I actually had these guys on stage with me last weekend as well. This is an example of how you could turn your principal place of residence, your home, into a mortgage-free house. Now, we're going to be talking a little bit later about more mortgage-free opportunities. The income that they get by renting out part of their home, which was unutilized, it was a storage area. That unutilized storage area now produces $2,200 per month. Their mortgage on this property is $1,400 a month. So they're about $800 a month better off, and they don't have to pay their mortgage. So they've turned their home into a mortgage-free house. So you need to start thinking about what assets you've got already and how they could be converted or elevated into more positive cash flow properties. Because would it be nice to have a mortgage-free house? Who wants a mortgage-free house? Yeah? How many people have I got in the room that are that are 25 or under? 25 years or under? Okay, a few of you. Do you believe that in the next 12 months you could go out and get a mortgage-free house? Who believes they could? Yeah? Why isn't everyone's hand up? It's too hard. Too old. Come up here and I'm going to publicly spank you. You'll enjoy it. Too old, okay. My daughter is 22. She might listen to this, I better be careful. She's 22. She is currently building a mortgage-free house for herself. The strategy for her is a partial sell down. So she's building something big enough that she can partially sell down part of the property. She takes the money from that. She puts it to pay down the debt on the rest of the property. She's built a certain design so that she has an area which is compartmentalized, basically, that is totally her own. She rents out the rest of it and she makes money out of where she lives. Now, because of the strategy, that means that it wasn't totally reliant on her income. I spoke to somebody during the break about how hard financing is right now. And I said, it might be hard because you're looking at the wrong strategy. See, if you're having trouble financing right now, you need to look at a strategy that doesn't focus on your income or your serviceability. Your strategy is probably wrong. You need to start focusing on a strategy that the financing will be assessed on the deal, not on you. Now, that's a different type of strategy, different types of properties. But when you switch that, it means you can move forward. There are other deals you can do. You can create more passive income if serviceability is your problem. You can create more equity if equity is your problem. So understanding all of these elements is what makes you be able to continue to move forward, no matter what situation you're in. But you've got to focus on this income side of things. And that's where this really comes into the fore. This is another one of my students. She actually lives here in Sydney. She was at the event last weekend. Now, under 30, and she's created $30,000 positive cash flow on a property she doesn't even own in Sydney. Would that be all right? There is no excuse. There is no excuse for you not to take action. There is always a deal you can do. I don't care how old you are, how young you are, how much money you do or don't have. There is always a deal you can do. And for someone like Karina, you know, to be able to actually create a passive income out of something she controls but doesn't own. She didn't have to buy it. She didn't have to go through financing. You know, if that was a weakness, she didn't have to go through financing to get that passive income. Worked once, let's do it next door. So she did exactly the same strategy on next door as $27,000 a year positive cash flow. Now, the types of strategies that you implement will depend on where you're doing them, the jurisdiction, the laws in that area, you know, what your capabilities are, where your starting point is, what you want to achieve. There's a lot of factors that come into what you need to do next, which is why you need to work to a strategic plan. You need to be assessed. You need to sit down with one of my strategists and do a complete review. Now, it's free. Do a complete review on your circumstance to all the students. You do a complete review on your circumstance. If you haven't had one for a while, go and have another one. And understand where you're at and what your position is right now, what you're capable of right now, and what you have to do to move forward. But go to that meeting knowing what you want. Really super important, because that's the one ingredient that no one else can give you. It's the one thing that you have to initiate. Your starting point is a given situation. Where you want to go is your call. When you know those two points of reference, then a plan can be put into place to get you from here to there. But you've got to know those two points of reference. And if this one here is running around and moving and you don't know where it is, you don't know what plan to put in place to actually get there. So you have to come up with that. There's a lot of thinking involved in doing that. Because I don't want ego to come into it. You know, I'm going to show you some amazing stories shortly. And you know, they're fantastic stories in relatively short spaces of time. But I want you to go to your heart space and decide what it is you want to make happen. Not what ego says, not what, you know, somebody next to you thinks that you should be doing. It's what do you want? You know, and for some of you, having a $74,000 income when your income previously was $49,000 changes your world. You know, if you brought up two kids and paid off a mortgage on $49,000, and in the space of 3 years you were able to create $74,000 worth of passive income, which means that your job now is optional, that's life-changing. That's life-changing. So whatever your figures are, you know, you've got to think through that stuff and really know what you want to achieve, because we can't do that for you. You've got to do that. Just another little example here before I move on about this. What this also does, and this is the same kind of strategy we're talking about here and being able to create, you know, passive income out of using your excess effectively, creating income streams out of your excess. This is a young couple. They were massively negatively geared. They were $64,000 negatively geared. And they had a negative equity of $200,000. So they'd been caught up in the negative gearing racket. They've been lied to by the marketeers. They've bought properties that are overpriced because of the marketeering fee in there. They bought end-of-the-line products because a four-bedroom, two-bathroom home is supposed to be what you need to have, where in actual fact, that's not what anybody wants. You know, and they drop in value and there's no differentiation between yours and anybody else's. There's no way of increasing a value on that property because it's a brand new property, and all you got, the only upside you've got is to sit back and wait for that property to increase in value. Consequently, they're $200,000 upside down. So their assets are worth $200,000 less than their mortgage and $64,000 negative cash flow. Is that a great place to be in? Not at all. Unfortunately, it's a very common place. It's a common scenario. I see this scenario over and over and over again. Now, but it's not a fatal disease. It can be fixed, but it's going to take time. Now, for these guys, do you think a bank can lend them any money? Nope. So they need to look at strategies that they can do without implementing their income streams, without going for financing in their own names. And there's lots of ways to do that where they're not the one that counts for servicing with the bank. The first deal I did was this one here. Now, it was a low-end purchase, okay? But it was a low-end purchase that they were able to get into with basically just credit cards. Okay, so they're into this one here. That you can see the before and after. They worked to make all of that happen and turned it around. They increased the equity by nearly $90,000 and $4,500 positive cash flow. Not huge, but it was a start. They've now got a little bit of money. They're starting to claw back that negative $200,000. Then they decided, well, we need income. Serviceability is a problem. We've got $64,000 negative cash flow. $4,500 helps, but it's not enough. So we need to focus on income. So the next deal they did, they focused on a property they already had. This property was costing them $900 a week. And by implementing the same strategies I've been talking about previously, they were actually able to turn that into an $8,000 positive cash flow. Massive turnaround in just that one property. Because it worked once, they decided to do it again on the second property. Turned that one into $12,000 positive cash flow from negative to positive. So we're starting to see a pattern here. This is working. They're getting back to positive. In the space of 10 months, they increased their equity by $90,000 because equity was not their focus. Income was their focus. And they increased their cash flow by $65,000 with another $25,000 in the pipeline. That's massive turnaround for a couple that we saw in the first slide, probably couldn't get finance. Probably couldn't change those circumstances. And this is where operating on a strategic business plan is what changes that around for you. So what does this mean? Properties that are higher spec, lower maintenance, community-based activities is what is desirable in desirable locations. Because as we get more information, as we get more competition, you need to be producing properties at a higher level in better locations to get the kind of yields that are going to create this kind of outcome for you. Where's the opportunity? Be the 25%, not the 75%. So the investor, not the renter. You know, you want to be in the renter sphere. Learn how to create micro apartments and maximize cash flow so you've got more rentable doors per square meter. And learn how to capitalize on the share accommodation trend and without the capital cost of ownership. So that's something that is becoming more and more popular, where the control is what is important rather than the actual ownership. So more rentable doors per square meter, and as much control over properties as you can. When I talk this afternoon, as we go forward into 2020, I want to see you control as much land content as you can. And I'll explain that this afternoon, why I'm saying that, as much land content as you can.
So, wow, what did you think? Imagine actually getting out there and having a mortgage-free house. Or imagine creating, you know, passive income from properties that you may or may not even own, but actually control. And control is really the key there. You know, and that's really the framework for change. It's already underway. It's already happening, as you can see. And it's really a matter of staying up to date with this kind of information and then putting it into practice for yourself. I've got a lot of free resources, articles, profitable tips and things that you can actually download. I've got videos. I've got all sorts of stuff on my website. So why don't you pop on over to www.iloverealestate.tv, and there's stacks and stacks of information on the website. I was chatting to one of my students the other day, and he said he had a few hours on a Sunday afternoon and he decided to get in and go through some of the free resources on my website. Well, 6 hours later, he was still there finding out really valuable information that he's now putting into practice. So we had a great old discussion about that. So look, next week, what we're going to be doing is I'll share with you again some of the big disruptors that you can capitalize on. And we'll be back again. I'm going to do a whole series of this, and we're cutting into the live event that I did on tour. So we can cut into that, and you can hear some of the very valuable information that we went through at some of those live events that I did. So I'll catch you again next week, guys. Talk to you soon. Bye now.